Hey guys, welcome to another show at RevOps and ABM Alignment. Today we have Derek Osgood. Derek, did I pronounce well your name?
You did. Yeah, thanks for having me, Romeo.
Thanks for the early morning in San Francisco and coming to the show. So guys, what we do when we want to launch new stuff on the market today, it's kind of a tedious work to get all the roadmaps and get all the features together and start working on planning, let's say. So luckily, Derek and his team, they made a pretty neat product, Ignition. And today we will talk a bit about Ignition and about how AI can help us actually build this roadmaps and all kind of project planning and help us actually launch better products out there. And Derek comes with some amazing experience and the sexiest experience. Me as a gamer, obviously, I looked at PlayStation, right? So PlayStation was one of the companies you worked at, Derek, and then you had a pretty neat experience even before with Sony. So that's like pretty awesome. But then bunch of experience in SaaS. I don't want to go in through the whole experience. You can tell us more. Advisor, angel investor, also running, you are a limited partner at GTM Fund. You can tell us more about that. And now founder and CEO of Ignition. I did my best to describe you looking at your LinkedIn. But Derek, what did I miss? What are those things that you should be known for?
Yeah, I think you covered a lot of it. I mean, I think, you know, the thing that I always kind of like hang my hat on is like I've run product and marketing teams kind of throughout the Valley. And so I, you know, really like view myself as somebody who's launched a ton of stuff. I'm, you know, like you said, I've launched movies, I've launched games, I've launched SaaS products, I've launched new companies and fintech companies at BBVA running the innovation, like running the marketing for the innovation arm there. So I've kind of like seen how launches work at a bunch of different shapes, sizes, and, you know, like constructions of companies. And I think, you know, in general, like I've always kind of sat in that little like messy middle ground between product and marketing where, you know, I'm responsible for both like building what is going to actually sell, but then also, you know, making sure that like that thing actually gets commercialized effectively and sold by the customer facing teams. And so, you know, with Ignition, basically we're setting out, like we've set out to build this like AI platform for bringing new things to market. And basically that, you know, at the core means helping the product team to build the right things with the right insights, and then helping the go-to-market teams to actually have all of the, like, create and execute all of the different collateral and enablement work that they need to do in order to make sure that customers know about it and customers actually adopt it. So, yeah, I mean, like, I think you covered most of the highlights, but, you know, I've launched, you know, movies at Sony. I worked on like 2012's launch, which was a really fun one. I did some gaming stuff. I used to like launch God of War, Gran Turismo, a bunch of big, you know, PlayStation first party titles. And then, you know, since then I've been doing a lot of like startup stuff, with venture-backed startups.
Yeah. So I want to go slowly through your experience, but, for today, our team is go-to-market roadmaps and go-to-market ops, because yeah, this is what we do in RevOps teams, right? And especially when we do ABM and when we have this more high LTV and high ticket deals. Roadmap mm-hmm. is like you really need to have things in place. And let's be honest, like we are users of ClickUp. I love the tool. It's awesome, but it's generic and made for you know, all kind of PMing, right? Monday the same, Asana the same. I use them all. So what's the what's the challenge of, you know, this whole go-to-market road mapping, and how can we solve it? This is one question that we would discuss today. And the second one, just to dive deeper into, okay, we understand the challenge, but what is a dummy's guide, let's say, to a good go-to-market roadmap? And what should we consider? What should we have there, right? So yeah. If we dissect these two, I think we can get a lot out of this this episode.
Yeah.
So how did you guys come up with this and how did you discover this problem?
Yeah, well, so I think, you know, for me, it was like having been through hundreds of different, you know, launches, whether it was products, features, campaigns, and like having been the one responsible for making sure that like sales was actually enabled and knew how to sell the things that we had built, you know, and I'd seen how all this had broken down. And I think, you know, like you mentioned, it's like companies basically try, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, this is a alignment problem, right? Between three very siloed teams. You have like product teams, yeah. You have marketing teams, and you have sales teams. And each of them has its own like specialized subset of information that needs to make its way to those other teams. But it's incredibly hard to actually connect those together. And so basically, you know, I've tried every tool and template under the sun. And like you said, like people kind of throw project management tools at this to try and solve it. And it's like, you have ClickUp and Asana and Monday. And those are great tools, but they basically only solve for like visibility into what is happening. And they require everybody to adopt them too. So it's like, unless you get really good adoption and really good usage of those tools, they don't really solve the problem, because the teams actually still need to do work in somewhere else other than those project management tools. And so like the product team is still doing some other kind of like product discovery work in their road mapping tool. The sales team like obviously lives in their CRM. The marketing team has to like create and manage a bunch of assets and collateral and like somehow get it into sales' hands. All that work happens outside of those tools that are designed to give cross-functional visibility. So basically, you know, I was like, look, like this is a pretty standardized process. There are clear pain points along the way within it. I have a good system for doing this. Like, I think that we should productize this and build it out. And so basically that's where it started from. And like, we did a lot of like customer research to inform what we built early on.
So what's the system? Like you mentioned that you have a system, like, is it a standardized system that you train the AI and the machine learning to learn? So then based on this system, it can help product teams actually make those roadmaps, or GTM teams, or can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, for sure. So it's basically kind of it's a combination of putting the connected tools in place to be able to do these different like stages of work and the process itself. And then also some of the underlying AI models that we've trained. So there's a lot more to what our product does than just this, but I'm just going to focus in on like the really tight feedback loop between like when a customer asks for a new feature and then when you actually launch that new feature. Right. So one example of this is like in our product, we basically plug into all of your different customer data, right? So we plug into all of the like feedback, like call transcripts from Gong, support tickets from Intercom and Zendesk, as well as like your CRM data. And we actually read all that with AI, and we identify like, okay, this customer specifically has asked for this feature, and we create that feature kind of on the roadmap for the product team. And what's cool about that is like, we actually map it to the account data from the CRM. So we say, this feature was asked for by this customer. This is the customer that you need to, and so like this feature is worth this amount to bill because it impacts this account, which is X deal size. And then like when the product team builds that and like they actually go back the other direction and mark that feature as complete, we go back to the sales rep who is responsible for that account. And we say, hey, you know, sales rep, we send them a notification that's targeted to them. And we're like, hey, sales rep, you know, A, these two deals that you are responsible for just got unblocked because this feature shift. So it makes it super quick and easy for you to just actually close that feedback loop between sales to product and then back to sales.
And I mean, I suppose there is a lot of infrastructure that here needs to be done, like to send all these data, right? Mm-hmm. So at what stage of a, like what was the deal size when it makes sense to actually deploy tools like yours?
I mean, we work with companies like all the way from, you know, 2-person founding teams all the way up through like 3,500 person enterprise organizations. But I tend to, you know, typically kind of say that the sweet spot for us is like when you're, you know, north of 100 to 200 people or so as a company. Mostly it's like, you know, you just need to have some basic infrastructure in place around your CRM, around like some call transcription for your sales team. And you need to have like an actual product team that's running like product development. You know, if you don't have those things, like it's going to be a little bit hacky. Like people that are, you know, smaller can definitely use us, but, you know, it's just, you're not going to get as much use out of it because you just don't have some of the like infra and process in place that you need to really take advantage of it.
Yeah. And I think now just thinking out loud, I don't know, there's some just ideas to connect it to ABM, but if you get, some customers, let's say you have, you target retail, and then those retail clients were asking over and over in different calls those particular features. Now you unlock those features because you put it in the roadmap, you developed it, and then you feedback it back to the, not the sales rep necessarily, but now to the ABM team. And then they can create those integrated campaigns where now they are targeting those type of companies that you learned about that initially you lost, right? That, yep. Hey, guess what? Now we got it.
Very much. Yeah, like that's exactly what we do is like, you know, we also map your like win-loss data at the account level to the personas that are created and the campaigns that you plan in our product around those launches, so that like we can go back to, you know, those ABM teams and say, hey, like here's the list of accounts that you can go target and you should go. Yeah. And also like here's tailored messaging based on the product that's getting built that you can use to go target them. So it makes it really easy for them to just spin up new ABM campaigns around this as well.
Mm-hmm. Got it. But if we go now to GTM a little bit, because also you run GTM Fund, right? Like, how can you tell me more about that and how the two are connected?
Yeah, I mean, GTM Fund's actually kind of disconnected from Ignition in the sense that you know, I get introduced to them through Ignition, but they're just another fund that they're a great, you know, early stage venture fund that focuses on companies, you know, that like both need help with go-to-market and then also, you know, like play in the go-to-market space. And so it was started by Max Altshuler and, you know, a couple others. And it's, you know, just a fund that I've invested in. And, you know, it's like got a really killer community though. I think everybody who's like in and participating in the fund are, you know, revenue leaders from ton of very successful companies, cross sales, marketing, even a sprinkling of product folks. And so, you know, basically like, you know, it's just a community and a fund that I participate in, but, you know, I love the alignment with what they do and, you know, what our vision and mission is, right? Because obviously we're all kind of like big believers in the impact of, you know, go to market. And I've kind of done the same thing with Market One as an investor as well as, you know, they're another fund that's like focused on the marketing side of the house. And so, you know, I'm just a big believer that like the reasons that products succeed, there's obviously you have to build the right product, but end of the day, like, you have to tell people about it effectively, and you have to bring it to market effectively. And that's what, you know, sales and marketing are designed around. And so, you know, I'm just believer in funds that end up kind of focusing in those areas.
Yeah. And I for the ones that want to learn, you can go on gtmfund.com. You see that there are like 120 plus portfolio companies there. Why I'm asking this is because you have now two amazing insights. One is from the funds and what you learn on the challenges of the go-to-market. And on the other side, you see the data of featured requests. And you understand what the market needs in a way. So you have both the builders, right? Yeah. And the customers. So today, 2024, let's talk about a 101 GTM roadmap that we could follow, and in a motion, in an ABM motion, or not a PLG motion, right? Because in this podcast, we mainly talk about mid-market and enterprise, where we can embed ABM, right? So if we can just slowly take it step by step, break it down, how should we approach this whole GTM ops road mapping?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so this is a big chunky topic. I could probably spend a week talking about this and barely scratch the surface. So I'll try and give like the simplest possible version that I can. It's going to sound kind of reductive, but I think, you know, in general, like the process starts with obviously like collecting feedback from customers and identifying like what they actually need, right? And so, you know, you have your accounts that your sales is talking to on a regular basis. You should have some systems in place for collecting, you know, input into product. And so a lot of companies, what they do is like they just do a lot of like calls and product discovery with like PMs talking to those customers, which is one way to do it. Again, our recommendation would be that you use something like Ignition, where you can plug into all those conversations that are just naturally happening with sales and success and everybody else who's talking to those customers and prospects. And then that feeds into
your
roadmap.
So this would be like your first party data, right? Like you want to understand do you have the customer insights from customers directly? But is it like on the side of internal customers? How would you run this?
So with internal customers, typically, like, again, like you would use a platform kind of like Ignition. We have the ability for teammates to kind of submit new feature requests and ideas, because obviously, like, you have feedback that comes in from all these different sources. You have first party from customers, you have, you know, second party that's coming from like your support team that talked to a customer and has some kind of takeaway from it. And then you also have, you know, the data that is internal, where it's like, you know, just your future vision and like what you want, what you're actually trying to build towards. So I think, you know, the first step is just finding a way to like easily aggregate all that. And so sometimes that's like set up a Slack channel for people to submit new feature requests and make sure that Slack channel like pipes into whatever you're using for road mapping. So, you know, find a way to get all of that stuff into one place, find a way to then like apply some, you know, AI over the top of it to be able to extract the insights out of it, because like, it's just too much information for one person to like qualitatively sift
through.
So
before AI, how it was done?
Honestly, it wasn't. It was, I mean, like you had a person who would sit there with a spreadsheet and they would read through every single, you know, call transcript, every single, support ticket, and like just try and parse what they could. And a lot of times the way that this is done is like the product manager will go sit with a salesperson or sit with a success person and be like, hey, what are customers telling you? Like, what do we need to be building? And that's just super inefficient.
Yeah. And regarding this, I just want to, dive deeper into this first step, so we go through everything and we have all the, we don't have unturned stones. Sometimes what I'm getting as an agency, a lot of questions of, hey, we want to go in a new market, we never been in that market before, we don't know. Like, we really don't know how to tackle this market intelligence, how to figure out the customer insights. So, and it's still the first stage of GTMs.
Yeah.
Any suggestion how we can do it in that case, or assumptions?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so obviously, like, when you're entering a new market, like, there's a couple of things that you need to kind of upfront, you know, assess, right? You need to size the market. So you need to understand, like, okay, how many potential customers are there within that market that we're going to go after? And, like, the best way to do that is obviously, like, go bottom up, say, like, okay, we think that we can close this many customers at this price point. That gives us an addressable market of this. And so, you know, market sizing is one component of this. That starts with, like, first understanding who is the actual target customer that you are going after within that market. And so, you know, doing some, like, initial persona work. Sometimes you're going to do some qualitative research, like customer interviews and whatnot, leading into that. And then you're probably also going to do, like, a combination of some qualitative and quantitative research. So you may do some surveying, you know, of that market and understand, like, how they stack rank, pain points, you know, what tools they're using, like, what alternatives they're using today. So there's some kind of first party customer research that you need to do before you can do any of that. Mm-hmm. But then you also need to do competitive analysis, right? And so that's where, you know, understanding, like, the first step is, like, ask those potential customers what they consider to be the alternatives, and, like, what are they using today to solve whatever problem it is that you're coming in with. And then, you know, it's like, go understand what those competitors are doing, you know, understand their strengths and weaknesses, go mine through, like, G2 reviews if you're a SaaS company, and, you know, like, understand what customers are complaining about, where gaps are, what they're good at, so that you don't end up kind of trying to go head to head against their strengths. And, you know, identify who are all the possible competitors, how are they growing, what are their, you know, like, main talking points, and how do you really position yourself against them? And then from there, you know, it's like, you need to come up with, I mean, from an ABM approach, like, it's identify, okay, like, of these customers that we think that we can target, you know, in this market, like, who are the best, you know, 100 to 1,000 customers that make up, like, an ideal target list based on the characteristics of the customers that our product, like, best serves within that market.
And I think being part of communities like GTM Fund, or being part of even Pavilion, it really gives you that unfair advantage, because you can find people who went through this challenge, right? Who maybe already did that competition analysis, or obviously maybe they did it 2 years back and you need to redo it, but there are some insights there. So, That's also, how much time does it take, like, well, from your experience, for a typical mid-market enterprise motion to do this stage, like 2-3 months, less?
It's pretty variable depending on, like, the, you know, shape and size of the company and the thing that you're launching. But, like, you know, to really do go to market correctly for, like, entering a new market, launching a new product, you really should be budgeting at least, like, 3 months, because you really need, like, a month at least to just do research. And then you typically have, like, a month of kind of strategic development and, like, identifying, positioning, messaging, what kind of product to build. And then, you know, like, you have a month of, like, execution work where you're creating all, like, campaigns and collateral that's needed to actually get it into market. And then you actually launch. But I mean, the process itself, like, you know, the leading up to launch process is really just, like, part of that overall, you know, picture. And end of the day, like, this is a year plus investment at least to be able to, like, really effectively enter a market. So it's a long process. And, like, everybody thinks that, you know, I think it's really common, especially in tech companies, for them to be like, okay, we're going to go into this new market, let's do that, like, you know, next month. And they just totally under invest in the upfront work that's needed to make sure that they actually commercialize effectively. And, you know, like, we launched internationally at Rippling, and, you know, like, I think that was a 2-year planning process. Like, you know, and wow. Same thing with, you know, launching our PEO. Like, that was a new market and took us, you know, 6 months of planning at least before we were even close to like ready to launch. So it's, these are long strategic processes that you have to like really invest in.
We can dissect this dinosaur because you mentioned about customer insight, marketing intelligence. Yep. And step two, I suppose, because you already mentioned messaging and positioning, would that be a typical step two? I don't want to influence you here, but how do you see it?
Yeah. So like once you actually like have your kind of base of research and you understand kind of your market, like the next steps are pretty straightforward. It's like, you know, first you really want to like set what your objectives are, because if you don't have like clear objectives, it's really hard to actually effectively plan. And there's going to, the objectives that you have are going to influence all the downstream strategies. So like if you're, for example, trying to like create a new category of product, it's very different from if you're trying to enter an existing category, because if you're creating a new category, you're going to emphasize so much more like problem education, and you're going to invest a lot more in like content marketing, because you're trying to actually build out that education base around like a narrative around why you exist. Versus if you're entering a new market, you may be much more like competitive in the way that you actually approach selling and marketing the product. So you may be actually going out and having a heavy like discounted switching campaign where you're like targeting all the competitors or all the customers of your competitors and saying, hey, like we'll give you 50% off to switch over to us, you know, and try and unlock them in that way. So I think, you know, the objectives are really important. It's an area that like people tend to skip also. So set the right objectives. The next step is like identify your positioning and messaging. So identify.
Derek, 1 second, just to dissect this part with the objectives before we jump into next steps. Can you explain a bit why we set the objectives after the market intelligence? Because sometimes we have these questions like, why is it important to first have the market intelligence and customer insights and then the objectives and not the other way around?
It's a good question. And so I think like you typically, there's usually like one objective that you have probably set before you've done this insight, which I always break objectives into like your business objective, your marketing objective, and then your communication objective. And so your business objective is like, we're trying to grow revenue by, you know, $5 million this year or whatever. And that's usually set, like, that's the reason that you actually are doing this thing in the first place. So that's set at the beginning. But then, like, the other objectives, you can't really set an effective objective until you actually understand your market, and, like, understand how they're going to react to these things. And so, you know, again, like, going back to the, like, category creation versus category penetration conversation, like, that is informed based on your customers' existing perceptions of that market and based on what your competitors do. Like, if there are no competitors in the space, you're creating a category because it hasn't existed before. And like, you know, if customers don't have a frame of reference for like what you do, you're creating a category. And so you're going to set a different marketing objective, which is like, you know, grow X category by Y percent, you know, this year or month or whatever. And then, you know, when it comes to the communication objective, that's all informed by your positioning and your customer. And then your customer's frame of reference. And so, you know, it's like, what do you need to motivate them to believe in order to be able to like take the action that you want them to take? Which again, comes down to like understanding who that customer is and what their needs are. So you have to do all this research before you can really objective set.
Got it. So then the third one is positioning. Let's dissect that a bit.
Yeah, I mean, positioning is a whole like rabbit hole. I could go deep down this, but I think, and I'm like a positioning geek, but I think in general, like positioning is all about identifying, you know, like what's unique and special about the thing that you are launching relative to customers' existing frame of reference. So it's identifying like what category do you want to play in, what are the attributes of your product that like only your product has relative to, you know, your other competitors, and what is the unique value that those attributes enable for customers? And then why should they believe that stuff? Like what are the supporting talking points? And so, positioning is all about just framing like why, like where you're going to compete and why your product is the best possible option there. And then, you know, messaging is like the words that you're going to use, or it's really like the things that you're going to say to support that positioning, and like how you're going to communicate it. Like, what are the main talking points for customers as you start, you know, translating that into market facing copy and assets?
Yeah. And usually, where would you put narrative, point of view, or shift of the markets, these type of things? Are they under this positioning and this messaging that you are creating at this stage, or how?
Yeah, I would kind of frame those as messaging, because like your positioning is a much more kind of strategic, like where do we want to play? What do we want to like what do we really want to highlight about the product? And like, what is the product at its like core? And then the narrative design and like, you know, the overall kind of point of view, what are the main talking points? Like that stuff is all like strategic messaging, where it may not even be words that customers ever even like see or hear, but it frames like how you talk about the product. Mm-hmm. And that ends up trickling down into all the actual like real copy and collateral that's created here. Like, for example, sales emails, website pages, you know, sales decks, et cetera. So,
and would you localize it in like, if you go for, you know, Sweden, or you go for, I don't know, Colombia, and then you have US, like, I suppose there is totally different cultures and messaging should be aligned, right? Because you cannot 100%. Have, hey, folks, for the Swedish guys, or y'all, you know, the Texas style copy, and to some guys in Colombia. So how should we approach this part?
Yeah, definitely. It's like launching internationally is a whole big like can of worms that can be really, really challenging. And like companies forget how much depth of change is needed across all the different like touch points. It's like basically every single country that you're launching to is its own separate launch in some respects. And it may have different positioning. It may have different competitive sets, because there are like competitors that operate only within that country that you're targeting. And so basically like you almost need to actually think about each country that you're entering as its own thing and its own campaign. And so most companies don't do this. Like honestly, like, you know, most companies kind of do a big, like one big bundled launch, and they kind of like try and apply the same messaging across everywhere. And it's fine. It's like going to be watered down. It's not going to perform as well as you think. And so the right way to do this, like if you have the time and the resources, is to localize all of this stuff. And it's like localizing not just the copy, but also localizing the strategy. Because again, like I said, like you might have totally different competitors in that market that you need to account for. So your positioning may be totally different for that specific market.
Yeah. So you rather spend the money and send it to LinkedIn and just run it through all the countries, then take that budget that you will spend with LinkedIn and hire some localized teams, or go into more research so that your spend in the end in all these different countries are more efficient, right?
Yeah.
But I suppose it's easier to put it into the LinkedIn ads, because then you don't have the human interaction, right?
Yeah, it's easier, not as effective.
Yeah, of course. And you get some credit from LinkedIn, so.
Yeah.
Okay, so next step. So we have the messaging. So what could be the next step in this road mapping?
Yeah. So once you've got like your positioning and messaging nailed down, like you're probably doing some pricing work depending on what you're launching, but I'll kind of leave that to the side, because pricing is kind of its own big rat's nest. So, you know, once you've got all that strategic stuff nailed down, the next step is like identifying, okay, like you know what you need to tell to who, but where are you going to go tell them about it? Right. And so you need to like put together an actual rollout plan of like, what is the phasing for how you're going to launch this thing? So like, you know, are you going to do an alpha? Are you going to do a beta? Are you going to like gradually roll people into the product? And then also at those different stages, what channels are you going to use to communicate with them? So you need to pull together a full channel plan on like, okay, are we going to like invest in content? Are we going to invest in LinkedIn advertising? Are we going to invest in, you know, going and posting to communities that those people hang out in? Are we going to do a lot of like outbound sales? So you need to identify like, how are you actually going to reach them? And how you're going to reach them informs what you need to create in order to actually communicate with them. So basically you identify your channel plan, you trickle that down into an actual asset plan of like, what are the pieces of collateral that you need to create to promote the product? And then you trickle that down into an executional plan of like, okay, what are the actual tasks that we need to get done to like bring each of those things to life? Because each of those individual channels has its own big subset of things that need to happen in order for it to be alive. Like just talking about outbound sales, it's like, if you have not run outbound sales motions before, you need to set up all of the infrastructure around your domains, your outbounding tools, you're setting up the actual sequencing and campaign, setting up the targeting, identifying your prospect list and cleaning that prospect list. Like there's a lot of tasks for every single one of those individual channels. And you need to think about this campaign at the strategic level before you can start actually getting it down into that executional level.
And how you see it, like in terms of competencies and people involved, like, can these things go in simultaneously, meaning you could do the messaging and the strategic messaging, the collaterals and so on.
Yes.
And on the simultaneously, you do the infrastructure and you set up, or it's like more of a waterfall approach?
It definitely, so there's parts of it that are waterfall, but like a lot of this stuff can happen in parallel. So basically the way that I think about it is like, you kind of do all the strategic development upfront, right? You identify, okay, what are the, like, who are we targeting? What's the persona that we're going after? What is the positioning and messaging for that persona? And then what are the like big important channels that we really want to focus on? And you just identify like the kind of high level stuff, and then you go kind of brief all the teams that are involved, right? And so oftentimes, you know, like let's say it's a product marketer that's kind of pulling together all of the like high level strategy, and then they kind of brief all of the different teams that, you know, work on all of these different like tactical areas. So like they're working with, you know, the demand gen team, they're working with the ABM team, they're working with the with the creative teams, and they basically go brief all of them like, hey, look, like here's the thing that we're launching, here's the kind of who it's for, what, how to talk to that person, where that person hangs out. And then all those teams like kind of go and do all this planning in parallel, where they're like, okay, like I'm the demand gen team, I own all of our advertising channels, okay, I'm gonna figure out like what is the tactical plans for how these advertising channels are actually going to get used, what they're going to like, you know, how we're going to target on them, what collateral we need for those advertising channels. And then it kind of like all ideally routes back, you know, through some kind of central mission control, which like is usually some person who's leading the launch. Mm-hmm. And then that person is kind of coordinating across all of these different teams, making sure that like, okay, the demand gen team wants to do this, this, and this on our advertising channels. That means that like, hey, creative team, like I need you to pull together this, this, and this in terms of actual collateral and assets. And so, you know, it's basically a lot of the executional stuff all happens in parallel, but the strategic planning up front is like pretty waterfall.
And you mentioned about personas and messaging. You do, if you have multiple personas, you do messaging for all of them, right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. You're usually going to have like sub-segmented messaging based on persona. And, you know, usually like what I tend to think, like when I think about personas, I try to avoid doing tons of different personas. And like, you know, I think it's really, you want to identify one like true ICP who is the core person that you really want to go after, who's going to influence the other ones. And then have maybe a secondary persona that is, you know, kind of the secondary target that you can go after as well. But by and large, like you want to focus as narrowly as possible on just one audience, because that one audience can expand into all the others, you know, pretty easily.
Got it. And when you do, when are you doing the some kind of competency or skill metrics to really understand if you have the right people, you should go out and, you know, hire an agency, how you should hire that agency, or maybe you need to employ someone. What cases you would rather take an agency versus internal employee? When do you do this?
I mean, ideally, you're doing that at the very beginning of the process, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you really need to identify, okay, do we have, you know, once you know very high level, like what the kind of overall strategy that you're going to be approaching is, and like...
So after objective, right?
Well, it depends, right? Because like you could run into this problem at the research stage where you're like, we don't know how to do research. We've never done this before. You know, like it's not a muscle that we have built inside of our company. And like, so you may run into this at the research stage, you may run into it at the like positioning stage. And so it all depends on like what your existing competencies are within your company. But at every step, you should really be assessing, okay, like for the next step, do we have the competencies and the teammates in place that we need in order to be able to execute this? And then, you know, you just kind of gradually start getting down the path and you realize like where the breakpoints are. There are going to be things where like it's better for you to start earlier. Like, for example, you know, if you're looking for support with like creative development, like that takes a while of like briefing and, you know, getting the agency up to speed on like your messaging, on your product, on your positioning. And so the earlier you can identify these problems and like if you're going to bring on an agency, the better it is. So, you know, again, I would say like upfront, you're setting who the kind of like launch team is at the very beginning of the process before you even start research. But you should be reassessing that launch team at every single step, you know, through the rest of the process.
And from your experience and what you saw, what are those skills that usually are outsourced to an agency, like the ones that we don't have that much, let's say, muscle build? Is it creative? Like, I suppose that's one of the competency or skills that I can think of.
I think there's a bunch, honestly. So, you know, like I've seen research get outsourced. I really don't recommend that companies like heavily outsource research, because you should be learning as a company. You should know how to do that. So research sometimes does. I see positioning get outsourced a lot. Again, that's another area that I would generally not recommend outsourcing, but people do it because they don't really know how to approach the process. I think then the most common two are really the creative work, you know, developing the actual collateral and assets, and then the like tactical execution work on the different like channels. And so, you know, oftentimes you'll have an agency that you're working with for
like paid ads,
et cetera. Yeah, exactly. There's sometimes that I also see people kind of outsourcing some of the like infra setup. That's another area where like it's really easy for you to mess it up if you don't actually understand the process. And so I think actually it should happen more than it does. Where
you mean, you know, the infrastructure, the IT, or what?
All the like MarTech to support kind of this process, and like making sure that your CRM is actually configured in the right way for you to be able to actually go do AVM. Like making sure that, you know, all of that actual technology stack is like working properly to be able to actually bring this thing to life.
Okay, so we see that. I know that we are approaching to our hour. So we have we have all these things set up in terms of collaterals. The ads are set up. We have the channels. Let's say the market tech is happening. And then some kind of launching happens, right? Yep. And what's the next stage? We are entering some kind of maintenance optimization stage, or how do we call it?
Yeah. So, I mean, after launch, like there is definitely, it's ongoing maintenance, and like, you know, launch is really just like the kickstart to the whole like meat of the campaign. Right. And so usually you're going to continue optimizing all the messaging that you've created and launched with. And so, you know, you should be like all of that research that you did up front to identify this, you kind of need to rerun that research and be like, okay, now that we actually have product and messaging in place, like in market, how are customers receiving that? Is it performing? our customers understanding the messaging that we're using? Is that stuff actually like effective? And you need to constantly be iterating on it. And so like you should be thinking about, you know, like when you're doing your launch planning, you should be thinking about subsequent launches before you actually do your first launch, because you should be like, okay, we're going to launch like V1 here. We need to have a second rev on messaging ready to launch by a month, 2 months, 3 months later, based on feedback that we get from the market once we're actually live. And then, so, you know, it's basically like a continuous series. Like you're always launching after you launch the thing in the first place, because you're going to iterate on the product. You're going to iterate on the messaging. You're also going to iterate on the channels that you're using, and you're going to optimize and decide like, hey, look, like these three channels that we decided were important, like they are no longer important because they're not performing, and we want to remove that, those channels, shift that budget elsewhere. And so it's basically an ongoing optimization process after that. You know, you may fiddle with pricing a lot more after launch, once you actually understand how people are reacting to it. So there's not a ton of like specific steps post launch. It's mostly
I'm just curious about lead nurturing and lifecycle marketing. Like, when do we plan that and when do we do that? Do we do it before we launch, so we have a very clear lead nurturing workflow and sequence? Is in maintenance mode, or do we launch and then do the lead nurturing? Or how do you see that?
I very much recommend you do all of that work up front before launch, you know, because like, again, it's, if you don't have that in place, you're going to get an influx of people when you do the launch initially. And if they're not prepared to be nurtured effectively, then you're just dropping them into a leaky bucket and you're ending up hurting conversion for yourself later on down the road. So, you know, I like all of that stuff I generally recommend is all done, you know, before launch. And it's important to, like, if you have to push the launch out a little bit and like give yourself time to get those things in place so that it is done right. And then, you know, again, like post launch, you're more optimizing it than you are actually like building net new from zero.
Okay. And is there some kind of period where it's like heavy launch and then it's fading down and then it's just maintenance mode? And if yes, how much is this heavy launch?
Think about 60 to 90 days, you know, with follow-on content, with follow-on kind of like announcements and case studies and everything else that comes out of that launch. And then I think, you know, it kind of trickles down a little bit after that, and you end up going into more of kind of a maintenance mode until you come back and like do the next sub-launch, right? So like, you know, if you launch like V1, it's like you launch V1.5, you know, 6 months later. Mm-hmm. And that is when you kind of like try and do the same motion. So it should be, you know, like what your company should look like is you should ideally have, you know, at least one of these like big launches a quarter. Mm-hmm. And that should kind of carry you through the quarter. And then kind of like each quarter you have kind of a new bigger launch that you're introducing. And then you obviously have a bunch of like smaller sub launches that are happening kind of like monthly or weekly, you know, throughout the rest of the year.
And when are you bringing in the data analytics, like the amplitude, the mixed panels, the, you know, understanding the usage of the product and optimizing it based on that?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, that stuff is all getting done at the very beginning of the process, which, you know, again, like it's informing the things that you're building in the first place. Like, ideally, you're identifying some kind of gap in your funnel and in your product usage that is, or your some really heavy usage that you want to lean into that's fueling a lot of the decision making you're doing through the launch. So I'm a huge analytics fan. I generally recommend you are always looking at that stuff, and like it's even independent of launch. And so you should do that right away if you don't have any analytics in place. But you know, I think it's like a critical component to the like identifying what questions to ask in the first place.
Yeah, for sure. So in the last 2 minutes, what are like top three mistakes that are made within this whole process? And or more, let me rephrase that so it's simple. What's neglected and like really neglected and should not be neglected?
So I think a couple of things. One is just lack of research. Like so many companies just skip the research step and they're like, hey, we know how to do, like, we know why customers want this, and it's all just gut reactions, and it ends up leading to failed messaging. So lack of research is number one. Number two is lack of actual planning and lack of a process. And so I think we talked at the beginning of the show about like companies, a lot of times they're like trying to move fast. And so they try and, you know, get in market in a couple of weeks, in a couple of months, and they don't actually put the rigor around this and have a repeatable process that they can do, like when it is time to launch, that they're like, okay, like this is the way that we launch products. These are all the considerations that we've thought through up front that we need to make sure that we tick all those boxes. And then I think the third one is like poor enablement internally. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's so common for companies, especially like product teams or marketing teams, to like build out this big launch campaign and they're like, hey, we pushed it out in the world and we made this big announcement, but they forgot to like tell sales and work on training sales on how to actually talk about it. And so then the first people that customers have to talk to when they come in don't even know what the product exists, how to talk about the product. And so it's like, it's a terrible customer experience. And so, you know, it's that's like ultra common.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Thanks a lot, Derek. Like it was amazing. And I really think that we all learned a lot about this 101 for GTM roadmaps. Tell us a bit where we can find you, resources, blogs, books, whatever, because you said you're a positioning geek, you're also a data geek. So where are you getting all this information from?
Yeah, I mean, two of my favorite books on positioning is called Positioning by April Dunford, and then two is Made to Stick. I really love both of those. They've informed a lot of kind of my thinking on positioning. And then I think, Obviously Awesome is the one by April Dunford. Positioning is the old Al Ries book, which like both of them, you should read both. They're slightly different views on this, but they're really both really good. And then I think in terms of like, you know, getting in touch with me, our website is havignition.com if you want to, you know, check out our product. And then I'm on LinkedIn, pretty easy to find. So, you know, reach out on LinkedIn, and that's where I spend most of my time.
Great. So if someone wants to try havignition.com, right?
Yep.
Okay, cool. So thanks a lot, Derek. Thanks, guys, for joining, some of you on LinkedIn, some of you from comfort of your home or driving. I hope that you learned a lot from today's episode from Derek, and get in touch with him if you have more questions about GTM and if you want to try the product. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for having me.